BBC Audio presents Doctor Who Silver Nemesis by Kevin Clark. Read by David Banks. Chapter 1. The closer one travels towards it from the cold, silent darkness of infinite space, the more the planet Earth appears as a backcloth to some small theatrical performance taking place on a limited budget. From the tiny distance of only a few million miles, approached directly, the little production looms confusedly. The seas and land masses cheap dye, dampened and imperceptibly merging one into the other. Towards this tiny but slowly growing scene, what appears at first to be a ball of rock shoots through the darkness. It might be taken for a comet, one of the endless number of pebbles or worlds passing eternally through space, until viewed from a few hundred miles. When seen from perhaps the distance which separates London and Berlin, a small tail of flame becomes visible, spraying from behind the rock. It might simply be a natural discharge of gases, self-igniting. Yet there is a quality of precision about the flame which invites further examination. It proves, from a closer viewpoint, to be not one, but four small jets of fire. The Earth looms steadily larger with a slow inevitability as the rock flies towards it, apparently propelled by four small rockets fixed to a kind of sled at its base. The comet might thus appear to be the creation of some enthusiastic amateur with an interest in space travel. It is certainly a ramshackle enough device. As it passes on, inexorably, towards the looming Earth, something else about it momentarily catches the attention. Despite the speed at which the comet, if that is what it is, passes, one might be forgiven for imagining one briefly glimpsed a face within the center of the rock. Somehow, in that instant, there is the fleeting sense of a still expression, carved in silver. Perhaps it is seen through a small glass panel, or more likely, not seen at all. Infinity of a more immediate nature was on the Doctor and Ace's minds that afternoon. In the case of the Doctor, a number of simultaneous infinities were at work, all of them pleasurable on this occasion. The rare appearance of the sun in England on a late summer's day seemed to be everlasting. The beautiful waterside garden of the pub, outside which they were sitting, equally seemed to be going nowhere, as indeed it had not for at least 300 years. Of greatest importance to both of them was the jazz blowing out of the saxophone of, in the Doctor's view, the most exciting musical discovery since John Coltrane. It sounded and felt as infinite as anything the Doctor had ever encountered on his travels. He had once defined music to Ace as interior space travel, and he reflected on the accuracy of this remark as the drummer counted in the band for the final number of their first set. The people around them were equally relaxed. The music blew through their souls and drifted gently away over the countryside. It would have required a cynic to pay more than passing attention to the two large men tapping their feet rather mechanically at the edge of the audience. Among civilized music lovers, it would be almost unthinkable that anyone might stare at them, either because they were identical twins, or because, while apparently listening to the band, they both continued wearing what looked like extremely expensive personal stereo headphones. Headphones that appeared to be made of solid
sample complete. Ready to continue?